It's series 3 of the Artist in Residence podcast, and we are chuffed to have you with us. Last series, we spoke to the likes of It's Nice That senior editor, the co-founder of Inner City Swim Club Swim Dome Crew, and the filmmaker behind the remake of Christina Aguilera's iconic Beautiful music video, about what it meant to them to use creativity for good, as well as to share real examples of how people are acting on those good ideas and turning them into action. My name is Isabel Wilkinson, and I started this project as a way to personally answer some big questions I had about creativity, problem solving, art, and who creative opportunities are available to. My goal is to bring people together to share their ideas and work together to drive forward solutions to the big issues affecting people and the planet. When it comes to the hardest questions, consider this your invitation to join the table and create answers, because together we can all be artists in residence. For the final episode of Series 3, we spoke to Jason Barron, a creative industry veteran whose work centres on making brands and people look good. A photography expert who's dedicated so much of his time to giving back to the industry he worked in for so many years. Jason used to lead the photography team at BBC Creative and also acts, does voiceover work, and loves to make music. In this conversation, we talked all about Jason's career in television and commercial photography, the mentoring that he does, and what a day in the life of a creative director at BBC looked like. We also covered Jason's philosophy on what commercial photography should be, namely the wider impact that great art photography can have on those that view it. Most recently, Jason has been working with Comet Relief to tell the stories of the communities that they help so that people can understand where their money goes when they donate. This conversation begins with me having just asked Jason to talk about his mentoring and him sharing some advice he got early on in his career about making your way in the creative industry. Enjoy.
It's a term I use, and for some reason I used it about 6-7 years ago. I was mentoring, and I just came back. This phrase popped into my head that our sports teacher used to say. It's a guy called Malt Kerridge, is in my hometown of Louth, and he was a proper sort of northern sports teacher, and he was a good football coach, but he always used to say his main thing was play the way you're facing. So if the ball comes to you, you don't turn with the ball and try and move it. If the ball comes to you, you see someone in front of you, kick the ball to them. And I just thought this play the way you're facing is like really kind of a useful thing to sort of, for creatives who are sort of doing stuff. And, you know, if you're doing something and an opportunity is presented to you right in front of you, just do it. It might be not be what you thought it might be. It might not be your ambition, but just why not just do it? And then, because if you collaborate with other people and you start doing stuff, then something else will happen and you go off and do that, you know. So I am Jason Barron, and for the last 20 years, I have been involved in some form or other in photography. For most of that, and arguably still in that, in a bizarre offshoot of photography, which is promotional photography. So I started at Channel 4. Way back when, in the late 90s, and I was a jobbing actor, actually, back then. I was an actor and a musician, finding my way in the world. I was from up north, came to London to seek fame and fortune, and bizarrely ended up working in the Channel 4 press office in the evenings, dubbing tapes. Now, that won't mean anything to a lot of people who are under the age of probably 45. But what I used to do in the evenings was pop a master beta tape of a program that Channel 4 had made in a slot in a massive bank of videotapes. I'd hit play, and I'd have like loads of VHS tapes banked up in this thing where I'd record the program. It was all in real time. And then I would write the labels for those videos, then take all the videos out of the machine an hour later once the program had finished. Stick the labels on for what this program was, and then send it out to the press. And that is how the press were previewing programs back then. And it sounds like so archaic. I mean, it was a long time ago, but it's not like I'm 150 years old. So things moved on so quickly, it's unbelievable. And then someone in the photo team, the photography team at Channel 4, went on holiday for 3 weeks. And I got asked, do you know anything about photography? And I sort of lied and said I did. To be honest, I knew a few photographers. And one of my, I was hanging out with a really, really amazing photographer, a guy called Nick Briggs, who is still taking beautiful pictures. And so I thought I knew a little bit about photography. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. And this idea of Play the Way You're Facing, this opportunity came to me, and I thought, well, why not? I'm at Channel 4. It's quite a cool place to work. I'm not doing much at the minute because I was an actor and a musician. And when you're an actor and a musician, most of the time you're not doing much, right? So I sort of took this job on, and I really fell into it and really liked it, and just sort of ended up fashioning my own job there. I was there for about a year or two, just on their sort of picture desk and helping out, and it was all very part-time. And then the head of pictures there, to cut a long story short, left to go to the BBC. And just before Christmas, I think it was 2001, you know, busy period for any sort of media team. And they said, oh, do you fancy coming to work for us for 3 weeks? And 20 years later, I left.
Wow.
That's how it sort of happened. And the first few years, I was still kind of juggling, doing a bit of acting, doing a bit of music and this job. And then it was around 2005, 2006 when, I sort of took it up full time. So, but literally started right at the bottom of that team in the photo team at the BBC, just doing picture desk stuff, and then just worked every time there was some sort of weird restructure at the BBC, which happens a lot. I seemed to go up the chain a little bit until, you know, 10 years later, I'm leading the team. And so myself and, a woman called Jane Record, who is still at BBC Pictures, absolutely rocking it. We led the team for many, many, many years. And then 2 years later, another restructure and I left to seek fame and fortune as a freelance who knows what.
Yeah, absolutely.
that's a kind of little 20-year history of who I am, what I am, and that kind of thing. The last 2 years has been really, really interesting for me because, you know, when I left the BBC, my boss at the time just said the one thing you've got is experience, right? You know, because this was during lockdown, quite a scary time to be leaving a safe job. But he said the one thing you've got is experience. So, you know, that's when I started doing the mentoring, and that's when I put myself out to a lot of photographers who were finding it really difficult in lockdown, especially to kind of get a sense of, you know, who they are, what they're doing, what they're taking pictures of anymore, making sense of their work. It's very lonely profession being a freelancer, and especially being a photographer. It's really, really hard and you feel very isolated. So quite a few photographers are coming to me saying, can you have a look at my work and see what you think? And, you know, I obviously have quite a lot of contacts. I've been in TV promotional photography a long time. I've got really nice contacts and I think I'm well thought of, so I can introduce people. So I've been chatting to a whole host of amazing photographers making a sense of their work, and it's been enormously rewarding. One of them phoned me up last night and just said, he's been looking for an agent for a long, long time, and I know one, and you know, through this and that, and they've been chatting and they've now taken him on, you know, and it's stuff like that happens. You go, oh, that's amazing. The last 2 years, I've felt really lucky in this kind of altruistic sort of way of just giving some stuff back and trying to help people and, you know, give people a lift up here and there. And at the same time, I'm learning so much off them. And yeah, I've learned tons in the last 2 years. So it's just been a really interesting time. And especially going from a very seemingly safe full-time job,
yeah,
to, you know, at my age, kind of going into, oh my, really putting myself out there and going, all right, I've got to get the bucks in, I've got to what am I going to do now,
you know? No, I can imagine, and thank you so much for running us through that. There's so many questions I want to ask you, but I guess as we're talking about your kind of career so far, what did your role, I guess, in the later years entail at the BBC? I know you worked as the head of photography and also as creative director at BBC Creative. So what were you doing kind of on a day-to-day basis in those roles?
Yeah, well, day-to-day basis really was that my team and, you know, the promotional teams at the BBC would hear about shows that were being made and then ultimately sort of making a call with marketing and PR people as to which programs we should support and how, basically. So there'd obviously be pan BBC kind of briefs coming in and ideas of what the BBC should represent itself as right now, And that would trickle down to what programs were deemed important for them to promote around that, you know. So it was all to do with strategies and comm strategies, PR, marketing strategies. So we'd hear about what programs were made, we'd make some decisions on which to promote, and then we'd figure out how to do that, and whether that's with, you know, trails, which are the kind of little bits in between the programs that kind of sell a show and edit down content sometimes, or a concept would be sort of created around those and made and filmed. And then off the back of all those campaigns, photography was always needed. And back in the day, for quite a lot of those 20 years, the question that I used to get asked, if I go into a meeting with a producer, exec producer or a commissioner, and I'd say, I hear you're making this program, we're here to do photography. A lot of those 20 years, they would say, "Ooh, can we get a Radio Times cover?"
Right.
Now, those listeners out there who don't know what a listings magazine is, this is how people used to find out about TV shows, right? They used to read these funny magazines, which you still can buy, and I shouldn't do them down because they still actually get read by an awful lot of people. And they're seen in every newsagent and supermarket in the land. So they still have a big presence. But that's how people found out about TV shows, right? There weren't streaming platforms. There weren't kind of big out-of-home advertising campaigns about TV shows. So our bread and butter was to create photos that worked in the press, in the printed press. And then in the last 10 years, that all changed, largely due to the birth of iPlayer at the BBC, because obviously now the main portal that people find out about shows is online and digital. So if you're browsing on iPlayer, you know, that whole product, you know, as well as Netflix and Amazon Prime, all these things, that the product is photography. The product is a load of images on a screen. So in the last sort of, yeah, especially 5 to 10 years, that was the most kind of important thing to try and get right in terms of photography, is making those images that hit streaming platforms. So my job day to day was to go around and convince producers that photography was really important for them, largely. So, and iPlayer really helped, because, you know, the first thing that anyone sees of some content made for TV or film is actually a photo or some sort of photography or image, whether it's a movie poster, or, you know, something you'd see at a bus stop, or something you see on iPlayer. So photography is really important. My job in the end was to big my team up and tell the world how important their role was, really, and make some decisions off the back of that as to, you know, what programs we should be supporting and how we're going to do that with photography. And then, you know, the team of creative producers, we'd all think about the best ways to do that and how things should look. And that was, you know, that's again really important, because there's loads of different ways that photography really has to work hard in the TV and film space, because it has to represent the content, but it's also got to be impactful. You've got our talent. There's so many kind of nuances to it.
Yeah, something I learned about recently was that not everybody, you know, I'll take Netflix as an example, but that not every user on Netflix will see the same images to promote their shows, and it will be tailored to your specific interests. And I just think that is such a good example to showcase the power of this visual storytelling.
It is. And I did a big piece of work in the last year. I got called in by the lovely team at Paramount to talk about key art, especially you know, the main key art on these TV streaming platforms. And yeah, a few years ago, what Netflix were doing, which was really clever, was playing with their algorithm. So yeah, you're right that if depending on your login and your preferences, the picture that came up would sort of try and second guess your viewing preference. There's quite a lot of research done recently, though, that actually it worked for a little time. It worked for a time, but unless you've got a bank of images that are sort of endless, that are beautifully designed, and if you're not clicking on something, your portal will just look worse and worse, because it'll just throw up another image, And if, you know, all those images can't have been designed and crafted because no one in the history of any has got the resource to keep.
Yeah, to do that many.
So the art of key art was being demeaned a little bit by Netflix. I think they've got a handle on it in the last few months, but I'm still doing loads of research on this because it's fascinating stuff. I sort of got obsessed with it about 6 months ago, key art on all these different platforms and how people do it. I presented this, I got asked to present a thing about key art, and it was meant to be like a 45 minute presentation. It ended up, we did two sessions of an hour and a half long.
Wow.
In depth, and the Q&A is coming out of it, and it's just so fascinating about, you know, what pictures really make impact and how you can really stand out, which everyone wants the answer to, and I'm not sure there is one.
Well, it's this ever-changing art form, isn't it? You know, as new technologies arise and as people consume in different ways, it's going to be an ever-changing landscape. And I guess it's having the core strategies and the core philosophies that guide your career that then help you to adapt to those new technologies as they arrive.
If everyone's got a formula to stand out on things, then it all looks the same eventually. So you've got to figure out something. It's a constant kind of battle against yourself and others as to trying to find ways of standing out in all these, as you say, these new technologies.
Why is visual storytelling important to you? I know you've kind of given us an insight to your career and how it's all happened, but why does it continue to be important to you?
Well, do you know what? I ended up at the BBC veering towards more sort of documentary photography, largely due to the genres that I was looking after. So I led on things like radio, documentary, factual shows and things like that, whereas my counterpart led on dramas and entertainment. And I found by doing that my love of photography was largely getting more arty and arty as the years went on. So my career took a slight pivot, for want of a better word. I hate that word, but there you are. When I was looking after factual shows, a documentary was being made by Rio Ferdinand. I don't know if you remember the documentary, but it was Rio Ferdinand suddenly had to look after his kids because his wife passed away.
Yeah.
It was a really surprising documentary by someone who people had never seen in that sort of situation before.
Yeah.
You know, is a famous millionaire footballer who's, you know, people have seen in GQ and, you know, these kind of things. And so I wanted to take pictures of Rio Ferdinand that people hadn't necessarily seen before. You know, people have seen him looking amazing in a suit in GQ, as I say. And at the same time, I noticed that there were quite a few documentaries being made around mental health. So I decided that this would be a really nice kind of series of photography that could happen. And so over the next sort of year, 2 or 3, 4 years, I sort of made it a personal project of mine to, one, try and support these programs with imagery, because sometimes they weren't necessarily in a PR or a marketing strategy, but I just felt like we should be supporting them. And I also got together on these projects with a photographer that I've probably commissioned more than anyone else, a guy called Richard Ansett, who has a real sort of empathic viewpoint of photography. And he's also a Samaritan and knows, you know, has sort of lived experience of mental health issues. So we set about trying to create this series of photos to promote tele programs, and it became sort of an art project, but it was advertising. That's sort of where my career has took a turn, which is sort of where I am now, really, in terms of what photography should be doing, has to do, why it's important. It's great making photographs happen that sell telly shows, but for me to get real personal kind of enjoyment out of it, they have to do a little bit more than that. So to place that photography in art spaces is really important to me. The BBC, the last few projects I did that really were fulfilling for me, We did the big Martin Parr project. So here's an art documentary photographer, and we got him involved in the BBC One Oneness Idents, which was an amazing thing. And then also me and Jane put together a whole heap of our team's work over the last few years, and we put on an exhibition, right? So in an actual gallery. So it wasn't just iPlayer and Radio Times. This was showing that photography can be art. Even if it's promotional photography, it can still be art. And so that's sort of where I am now is that, you know, I'm stepping more into the sort of art world of photography. And it's really, really pleasing. And in terms of storytelling, I'm now at Comic Relief, which, you know, most people think is just Red Nose Day. But, you know, the charity does an awful lot of amazing work. I've only been there a month or two. I've commissioned so much already, going around the projects that Comet Relief help and telling the stories of those projects, of those community centers and all that kind of stuff, so that people get an understanding of where their money goes when they donate. And the more depth you go into with stories, the more people want to help and more people donate. So it's kind of great. And that's the photography that I love, is documentary photography. It's you know, that's why I do photography. It's what keeps me interested in it.
You've said you've only been there for a month, but can you tell us a little bit more about what you're working on with Comet Relief, and I guess specifically focused on Red Nose Day, what kind of the activities are leading up to?
Yeah, well, it was really exciting for me because in the last 2 years, I've been really, really happy working with a lot of photographers and being freelance. But I always had a sort of eye on if there was a job at a charity, then that was really cool, then I would go for that. And so and this came up. So it's a maternity cover. I'm looking after things for a year. And I knew that I vaguely knew Jackie Black, who's now doing more important things like having babies, and I knew of her and their work, and they do really, really lovely stuff. So I was delighted to got the opportunity to kind of look after things for a while. And so on 17th of March, that's Red Nose Day. Everyone will know, you know, Comet Relief's been around since the 80s, and they put on this night, and it was set up by Richard Curtis, Lenny Henry, a whole heap of comedians over the years have supported this amazing charity, just to kind of bring a different approach to raising money to help people out of poverty. And they help a lot of other charities as well as directly helping as well. So they're a major organization now, a major charity that raises an awful lot of money. And yeah, their main campaign, everyone would know, is the Red Nose Day campaign. And that takes loads of different forms. There's the night of television that BBC still host, and I'm told will be for the next few years. And so lots of sketches are being filmed at the moment and written, and so that's all happening. They did a launch film with Lenny Henry, and Diane Morgan did the voiceover for it to launch the new Red Nose, which was designed by Johnny Ive, who is the Apple designer.
Amazing.
Amazing designer. He's designed this incredibly beautiful nose. So there's all the kind of so I've been doing talent shoots in studios, like proper kind of promo photography shoots in studios, but also there's the stories that of the projects that are going on at the moment. So lots of shoots going on about those. And then, yeah, as I say, there's every year a few challenges that talent sign up to do, and the main documentary challenge this year is Emma Willis, Oti Mabusi, and Ryland Clark trekking across the Cairngorms in the freezing. I think what was it? Ryland's quote was something like, "Camping. I don't know. The only camping I do is camping it up on a Saturday night."
Yeah, I love that.
You can just kind of imagine, you know, you're staying in freezing cold tents and ice climbing and trekking through the rivers, and you know it's going to be really tough for them, and so that's going on this week. So we've got, I had to find a, I had to find a photographer in Scotland who is not just a really good photographer, but who is also a really good mountaineer.
Yes.
Who
can
do this at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was so lucky to find a chap called Hamish Frost, who's been amazing. He was on the training days last week, and he's trekking with them and taking pictures at the same time. So there's all sorts of all manner of things going on at the moment, and a lot of documentary stuff being filmed as well. And my remit when I came in was, not to drop the ball in the absence of Jackie, who's gone on maternity leave, but I wanted to kind of test myself in terms of who I commission as well. So I'm very proud of the fact that like 3/4 of the photographers I've used already are female. We've got neurodiversity. We've got all sorts of stuff. I'm still pushing for more racial diversity behind the camera as well. It's a really good environment to be pushing that as well. I'm excited. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. Can't wait to see the fruits of the labor. And you mentioned to me that you are working on a new storytelling platform. So how does that link up with the work that you're doing with Comic Relief?
So the they tell stories on their website, Comic Relief, but there's a storytelling app. It's used by quite a lot of people, actually. It's called Shorthand, and that will enable images to be really to play a bigger part in the stories that they're telling on the Comic Relief website about their projects, basically. It's a really simple platform, and you can chuck images in there that you possibly couldn't if we didn't have that platform.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting and really good. So we can, if we're going into these projects, yes, we can show the people that's been helped, but there's all sorts of other photography that we can put in there as well, which just gives a deeper, richer understanding of the whole environment and of where people's money goes, basically. So, and the deeper you tell these stories, the more engagement you get. And as I say, that hopefully will lead to people helping each other more and donating and, just deeper understanding of people's problems.
To switch gears a bit now, I have to ask you the question that I ask everybody, which is the huge question of what does creativity mean to you?
Oh, that's always a good question. I think it starts, as most people think, it starts with some sort of problem solving. Humanity comes across problems and that they have to find solutions for them, and that's creativity is born to get over that. I think it's more than that, though. I'm going to put my neck out and say that you have to create problems, but you have to do so with at least at some point imparting something of your personality in there as well, right? So creativity is problem solving, but there's humanity involved. You know, when you look at someone's photos sometimes, and you know it's shot by them, right? And that's so whether it's a Martin Parr or a Nadav Kander or loads of photographers I know who and loads of artists, you just know that it's them. And yes, they've solved a problem or told a story through what they're doing, but they've given a part of themselves in that process. And I think creativity, and I'm not talking just about art here. I'm talking, there's people at the BBC who have to be really creative with processes, right? But I think true creativity, you give something of your own identity into solving that problem.
To go back to your example of, photographers or artists who you know the works by them, you quite often can't put your finger on why you know it's by them. And that's the essence of it. This thing comes out that you can't necessarily articulate with words.
Absolutely.
But the connections in their brain have led them to make the same decisions and bring something out into the world in a new way. I think it's fascinating.
You know, Nadav Kander's spoken about his photography, and he's almost not taking, when he's taking a portrait, he's not focused on the face necessarily. He's focused on the space in between his camera and the face and the atmosphere that brings. And that's an extraordinary way of kind of thinking about photography, I think. So yeah, I've often said this before about photography. This kind of photography is capturing a moment, like Martin Parr talks about himself as a chronicler of a moment in time, whereas Nadav Kander would say he's capturing an atmosphere, not necessarily a moment, but an atmosphere of that moment. And I think there's a sliding scale with that. You can look at a photo and think, is it a moment photograph or an atmosphere photograph? And they both can tell stories in a very different way. Say you've got a Martin Parr picture of a woman lying down on a bit of concrete next to a beach. That's obviously telling a story. There's kids, and it's quite clear that there's a story involved there. With Nadav Kander, there's a picture of someone, and it's a close up of their face, but the atmosphere that's imbued, there's a story in there as well. And it's, you know, both are great artists, I think, because, and this is important about creativity, they don't tell the whole story. They leave something for the viewer to make up their own story within it, and to bring their own. And I think that's important about creativity as well. Creativity has to allow whoever comes across that piece of creative to bring themselves to it as well, if you see what I mean.
I absolutely do. And what a wonderful place to leave our listeners to go on and make of this whatever it comes to them.
Thank you so, so much for tuning in to Series 3 of the Artists in Residence podcast. This project is absolutely a labour of love and a way for us to focus on the more positive perspectives on the many, many societal issues and problems that we face in 2023. It means the world that you choose to listen in. So if I can ask just one favour, one thing you could do for me if you've enjoyed the podcast, is to spread the word. The more people that listen in, the more people we can invite on, the bigger the community grows, the wider the impact we can have, and the longer we can keep doing this. Thank you so, so much. We'll be back soon with Series 4. But in the meantime, if you'd like to feature on, share news with us, sponsor the next series, please get in touch. I'm at isabel@artistsinresidence.fyi. We'll see you next time.